We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
With us in studio this morning, we have Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr. How are you?
It's all good. It's all excellent, as a matter of fact.
You have had an eventful last few days, haven't you?
The last 2 weeks have been a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Explain what occurred. What took place?
So, this is great. Since November 10th, it's been a fun-filled almost 2.5 weeks. So we did our T-Bones in Politics event on November 10th out at Smyrna. We had Marsha Blackburn, Tim Burchett, and Glenn Jacobs out. Had a little 700-800 people. It was a great event. And then that same day, I mean, not coincidentally, somebody decides to drop an ethics complaint on me. So we have that going. Then the very next day, Scott, which is what you're talking about, you know, which was Veterans Day, I went up here to the square to the veterans ceremony, which I try to do every year. And God bless our veterans. We wouldn't be here talking like this if it weren't to them. But in any event, so after that ceremony, I decided, I went back out to the farm because it was a day off. And I told my son, Joe, I said, let's take a couple of the younger horses on a training ride. And so Joe Jr. and I have 11 walking horses that we train and break for pleasure and trail. It's just a hobby. We don't sell them out of the courthouse, just if anybody's asking.
With the honey.
We just sell the honey out of the courthouse, right, Scott? Anyway, we took a couple of the horses out, and it's called a desensitization ride. And what it is, you're trying to expose the horses to things that they might run into on the trail, so they can experience some under saddle with an experienced rider, so they don't spook or bolt under another rider. And so it's just part of breaking a young horse. Everything's going great. We drop down into a creek, ride the creek, which is, you know, getting them used to riding in water, come up out of the creek. For whatever reason, my horse spooks, which is good. You want him to spook because you want to get back control, and then you want to go through that desensitization process. The problem this time was I did not have the girt strap on the saddle tight. The saddle slipped off to the right. That spooked her even more. She took off. She bucked me off, and I broke 9 ribs, lacerated my liver, and a punctured, partially collapsed lung.
At least you came off the horse.
I came off the horse. That's a consolation prize, Scott. Thank you. Laughing hurts, by the way.
I remember one time I was on horseback and the saddle wasn't on tight, and I slid to the side, but my foot got hung in the stirrup.
Yeah.
And so I went a few 50 feet or so, and that doesn't feel good either.
No, and at 67, I don't bounce like I used to. And let me just say this, I have been thrown before. This is part and parcel to having horses. But at 67, I obviously don't bounce like I used to. But moreover, this was complete rider error, because it must have been the Holy Spirit or something, Scott, because we're riding through the gate and the voice inside me says, you know, you need to dismount and tighten this girt strap. And I go, nah, it's going to be all right. I'm not going to get that. It'll be okay. I mean, I'm telling you, listen to the voice inside your head when it tells you to tighten the girt strap. But I didn't do it.
And that the ethics complaint, which was filed, I guess, the day before.
And not coincidentally, the day of T-Bones. I love the drama of politics, man. There are no coincidences in politics.
Did you get phone call, or did you go back and listen to messages after you got out of the hospital that people were saying, oh, you faked this whole thing, and you know, so forth?
You know what? I did have a couple of people say that I faked it, which was kind of funny, given the fact that I haven't slept in 2 weeks. But I mean, if I'm going to fake something, I'm not going to fake this, boss. And I'll be glad to show people the x-rays. But I'll tell you something, all kidding aside, and it's good that we can laugh about it, because we don't want to take ourselves too seriously. But you know, I believe, at the risk of getting a little bit too philosophical, I do believe that when life presents a hardship, a challenge, a difficulty, a problem, maybe a setback, there's an opportunity there. There's an opportunity there for us to grow personally and examine ourselves and find out how we can be better, do better, and be a better person, a better mayor, a better father, a better husband. And so I'm laying in the hospital bed Wednesday night, racked with pain, and I can't move. You can't sleep, and you're miserable. And you're laying there in the dark, and the thought occurs to me, I said, Lord, you know what? I said, I don't know if there's a reason for this, but on the off chance that there is a reason for this and there's an opportunity for me to take this difficulty, this challenge, this suffering, and grow from it and be better, I don't want to lose that opportunity. And I will tell you, the Lord's been faithful in that to me, Scott. He has revealed a couple of things about myself that I need to work on. That's not to say there's only a couple of things I need to work on. I'm just saying He revealed a couple of things for me to work on. And so I'm embracing the challenge of growing beyond this incident. So hopefully when I exit, I'll be a better person.
And this happened 2 weeks ago, right?
It happened 2 weeks ago, Tuesday.
And your first stop after all of this was at St. Thomas Rutherford, right?
Right. So I'm laying on the ground. I tell Joe I didn't get knocked unconscious, although I was. The pain was excruciating because I heard two ribs crack. I heard them break. And I told Joe, I said, I think I've broken a couple of ribs. Call Jenny. And the great thing about it is where we were doing the training ride was right next to the driveway down by a swell or a creek. And so Jenny was able to drive right up to me. And I said, call Jenny. I said, get her down
now,
here.
Now, when you're saying these names, daughter,
Jenny's
son?
Jenny's my wife. I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. And Joe Jr.'s my son. So Joe and I are riding together. I said, Joe, call Jenny, my wife, and get her down here. I think I need to go to the hospital. I got a couple of broken ribs. So she came down there, and I crawled into the back seat of the car. And I think she, like all wives and mothers know intuitively, that don't listen to your husband when they're in pain like that. So she went ahead and called 911, and they met us at the Sharpsville Church of Christ, where I was loaded into an ambulance, taken to St. Thomas Ascension. St. Thomas did the x-rays, did the preliminary exam, and said, this is a trauma situation. We don't do...
a level one trauma?
Yeah, exactly. So I got taken to Vanderbilt Trauma Center, and where I stayed for 3 days.
What was the most eye-opening part of going through all of this? I mean, what would you say stands out to you more than anything else?
Thank you for that question, because I did want to bring this up. But the level of professionalism and care and concern on the part of our first responders. I've always known that our EMS and our fire and sheriff and EMA, the first responders, I always know, especially since I've been mayor, when we had that April tornado in 2023, if you remember, and out in Reedville, and then everything subsequent to that, I've always known that they were phenomenal. And I got to tell you, it wasn't because I'm the mayor. I really believe, having talked to other people, that the care that I received, the concern that they had for me, is typical of the professionalism of this group. And it wasn't surprising, but it was really, really great to see in action.
And who all showed up whenever 911 was called?
So when we met at Sharpsville Church of Christ, I believe the truck from Kittrell showed up, the fire truck from Kittrell, and then Commander Engel. And I know Commander John Engel, and of course he's not going to let anything go without making a joke about it or two, which I enjoy his sense of humor. He and I have a good relationship. And then I don't recall the two EMS paramedics, but they were there, and then they all pulled me out of the car and loaded me on the gurney and was transported to St. Thomas Ascension.
That's a lot to go through.
It is. There was none of it that was comfortable. Never mind the breathing and trying not to cough or sneeze or laugh. Just breathing is difficult, and the movement. Getting up and down is real problematic. You know, the doctor says my recovery is way ahead of schedule, but I'm now suffering from some pretty significant back and chest spasms because of the injury, but I'll be okay.
What always gets me with firefighters, with paramedics, all of them, really any of the first responders, is the fact that when they get to that person who they're helping, in this case you don't know what call they came off of, you know,
exactly.
An hour ago, 30 minutes ago, you know, and they may have seen somebody die.
You have no idea. And but I will tell you, They are highly trained. They're very professional. They deeply care. And I'm glad, so really glad you asked that question. What was the thing that opened your eyes? Well, my eyes were already open, but they are just now wide open as to the level of care and professionalism. And it goes to show that our investment, Scott, into these public safety buildings, our investment in infrastructure that includes additional EMS stations, our investment into these kinds of services matter in the everyday lives of the people that we're committed to serve in Rutherford County, and we're going to continue to do that.
And what time of day was it when you had the accident?
About 3:30 in the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah, 3:30 in the afternoon.
From what the way you describe it and everything, you didn't realize how bad it was until what, the next day, 2 days later? When did you realize?
So they told me I had, when they took me in at St. Thomas Ascension, they said, you've got 9 broken ribs, and it appears you lacerated your liver, and you've got a punctured, partially collapsed lung. And I said, because of that, we're unsure about what additional organ damage you may have, so we're taking you to Vanderbilt. It wasn't till the next day that they came in, and what was funny, well, not funny, funny strange, is the next day, the Wednesday morning, they come in, and physical therapy comes in and says, okay, we need to get you up on the side. We need to get you sitting up on the side of your bed. I said, great, help me up. And they said, no, we're not going to help you up. I said, all right, if you're going to be that way about it, I'll help my own damn self up. And I thought I was going to die.
And
the pain, I almost passed out from the pain. But I pushed through it, and I sat up on the side of the bed. And as soon as I did that, my heart rate dropped down to 29.
Wow.
Yes. And they go, time out. We got another issue. Because I was getting ready to, I was getting real nauseous, and I threw up. I was getting ready to pass out the whole 9 yards. So come to find out, well, we discovered that I've got a very, what they call a very slow, there's a term for it and I forgot, but I got a very slow heart rate. My blood pressure is good. I just have a very slow heart rate. My resting heart rate's like in the upper 40s, low 50s.
When you're in the kind of pain that you're describing, you know, being transported by ambulance from one hospital to the other and so forth, if it were me, I don't think all this stuff would register. In other words, I wouldn't fully grasp how dangerous this was, how bad the accident was.
You don't. To be candid, guys like us, Scott, I mean, we're from an era where we kind of downplay our own issues.
Doesn't
a
hurt.
Bit. Yeah, it doesn't hurt our way through it. And even so, when I went to do a follow-up checkup this past Monday, you know, the physician was telling me, he said, you have a really, really high threshold of pain. He said, that's good in one sense. He said, because you're able to push through physical therapy where others potentially are not. He said, but the bad part of it is, he says, you will ignore acute pain or pain as opposed to soreness. He said, and when you do, you're going to exacerbate the problem. He said, that's why you've got all these really bad muscle spasms. He says, because you're pushing through the pain of the broken ribs. And so he said, you're going to have to throttle it back. And so I think maybe I went back to work. I went back to work the next Monday after the incident for a little bit,
man,
not very long. And then I came back full time that following Thursday and Friday, full time. So I've been trying to get back in the saddle as quick as I can, but I may have been rushing a little bit.
Just not the same saddle.
It's not the same saddle, yeah. Good point. Good point.
Hearing those words, lacerated liver and partially collapsed lung, those two things alone, I mean, those are serious.
They are. And I don't know if your listeners remember this or not, but maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we did a T-Bones event for Dr. Manny Sethi, who was running for United States Senate. It was out there in Las Casas at the Messick Farm. We had like 900 people. It was a great event. Senator Rand Paul came. A lot of fun. Great stakes, great entertainment. Had a blast. Well, Dr. Manny Sethi he's a trauma surgeon at Vanderbilt, so he came to see me. And he told me, he said, Joe, you're very, very lucky. And I said, well, how so? He said, the mortality rate for 9 broken ribs is 30% to 40%. I said, how can that be? I said, the death rate for 9 broken ribs is 30% to 40%. He said, because of the amount of force and energy it takes to break and dislocate 9 ribs, you inevitably have serious and significant internal organ damage, which leads to the cause of death or cardiac arrest. So I'm blessed. You know, And I got some great care at St. Thomas Ascension. Got great care, of course, by our first responders. And Vanderbilt did a phenomenal job. I was just glad to be out of there in 3 days.
So other than PT and you know, just recovering in that long, slow process, is there any type of surgery you're going to need in the future?
No, they were worried about the punctured lung and it accumulating fluid. I still have some fluid on my lung that they're monitoring. The lacerated liver, they're monitoring it, and it seems to be okay. I've got bruises all up and down my rib cage, obviously, and I'm still very sore. It hurts to breathe and laugh and talk and sneeze. You don't want to cough or sneeze. But, you know, it's just the healing process. They said the pain is going to persist for about 6 to 8 weeks, and he said you won't be recovered for about 3 months. So my first question is, when do I get back on the horse? And they said it'll be 1st of February before we would recommend you get back on the horse.
But
I will be getting back on the horse.
I think I would do four-wheeler. I'll break the next four-wheeler.
That's great.
I don't think I'd want to get back on the thing.
You know, I love them. I've been thrown before. The only difference between the other times that I've been thrown and this one, Scott, is I broke 9 ribs. So we'll cinch the girt strap a little better next time. We'll listen to the Holy Spirit, hopefully.
Hey, have you heard lots of stories from other folks who've been injured since this?
You asked the question a minute ago, what have I learned of this? And so I have this, and you'll appreciate this. Men typically, not always, we have this go it alone, lone wolf. You're laughing, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, I'll do it myself. You know, don't worry about me. You know, it's, you know, attitude. And you and I grew up watching John Wayne movies, man. That's you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And so we kind of identify with that a little bit, and what it means to be a man, and, you know, what it means to be a husband and a father. You know, the things that it means to be a husband and a father is to provide and protect. And we take men in our generation take that seriously, and we take pride in providing and protecting for our families, our wives and our children. But that tends to isolate us, and we accept that. And so when I became mayor, I kind of brought a little bit of that. Well, not a little bit, a lot of that with me. You know, if I have to do things by myself, I have to stand alone, I will. But I'm going to tell you something. The one thing that I learned that just blew my socks off, that humbled me to my core, was the outpouring of concern and prayer from all across the community. I had no idea that I was in people's prayers and I was in their concern when I went through this. It was humbling, and because I thought I was on this island and doing things, and I'm not. I've never been on an island. I've always had a lot of people helping me, and how arrogant it was for me to think that I'd ever did anything by myself, because I never have. And I think that's a great illustration as to, you know, what God can reveal to you about yourself and about others when you go through a hardship. So that's one thing I've learned.
Yeah.
I'm great, very grateful, very blessed to live in the best community anywhere. And they showed it these last 2 weeks.
And it's during those hard times, I think that all of us, you know, no matter what we're going through, we probably grow the most during those really difficult times.
I absolutely believe that. And I, at the risk of sounding preachy, Scott, you know, I try to live by, I'm a person of faith. I believe that Jesus Christ is my Savior. And I believe the Bible is the Word of God. And in that Word, there's Romans 5:3, which I share a lot with people. And that is, suffering leads to perseverance. Perseverance, character, character, hope, and hope doesn't disappoint us. And so, but it begins with suffering. And it's not always physical pain. It can be emotional trial. It can be relationship difficulty. It can be a lot of things. But we have to embrace the suffering so we can push through to that place of character through perseverance where that hope awaits us. And so that hope does await us when we push through. So embrace it. And that's what I'm trying to do here. Embrace this and find the opportunity to be better.
Again, with us this morning, Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr. So after you're at the hospital in Nashville, after you're in your room at Vanderbilt, maybe the next day or so, and after people start learning this is what happened, did you start seeing people come in to visit you, or what happened?
I am a pretty private person, and I don't like the, not dislike, I think it's a deep hatred, Scott, for hospital gowns. It's like it's on my top 10 hate list, right?
I don't know that many hospital gown models out there. You know, they're just not.
I don't like them. I don't know what purpose they serve. And so because of the attire that you're required to wear when you're in the hospital, I limited visitors to just family. And people were great to respect that. And two, this is the first time I've ever spent the night in the hospital in my life. Except, well, when I was a couple of years old, I had minor surgery on my wrist, and I spent the night one night when I was a little kid. But this is the first time in over 65 years that I've spent a night in the hospital. And I just don't do it. And I had to do it this time, and I probably wasn't the best of patients.
Whenever you're at the hospital, you have that option to check whether or not you want to be listed in the hospital directory or whatever you call that, so that folks can know if I call, I'm going to ask for Joe Carr and they'll put me to his room. Well, right. If you're not in the directory, they don't do that.
So I didn't find this out till later. Because I'm a mayor, I was afforded, they didn't even acknowledge that I was there on that directory.
Interesting.
And yeah, so, and I think that's why if people called, they said, well, we can't acknowledge or deny the fact that he's here.
Yeah.
And that worked out real well because I needed to sleep and rest, because I will tell you, I stayed exhausted, just physically tired all the time. The fighting the pain is mentally and physically fatiguing.
Your wife, because she knows you well, did she play that role of, you know, kind of being the guard of your room so that folks don't just enter?
So she and Maddie, my daughter, and my son Joe Jr., they were kind of like the gatekeepers. And so and I spent a lot of time just trying to stay in the word and reflect on the purpose, and if there was a purpose, making sure I didn't miss it. It went by pretty fast, but they wanted me to stay through the weekend, and I was insistent that I was going to get out on Friday. And because, you know, they said your lung is a concern for us, the punctured lung is a concern, he said, but we want to make sure we're monitoring the pain. And I said, well, get me off the IVs ASAP, get me on the oral meds so I can transition, because I'm leaving Friday.
Yeah.
I said, I'm just telling you, my exit strategy is Friday.
And
they honored that, and it's worked out well, and because I can be in pain at home just as well as I can be in pain in the hospital.
Yeah, that's very true. So. But as far as that recovery process and doing PT and all that stuff that's going to be really exciting, did you already start doing that recovery, that physical therapy?
Yeah. So when I sat up on the side of the bed, as I was talking about, and my blood pressure, my heart rate dropped down to 29, I shared that with you. They got real concerned, so they put a heart monitor on me because they wanted to find out what that issue was. That was a separate issue, but it was an issue that was creating an obstacle to my physical therapy, so they needed to kind of get their arms around that. So the next day, I forced myself to take a walk around the block. So that next day, I had taken two walks around the block. That evening, they didn't know it, but I took a shower by myself. I didn't ask them to take it. I just disconnected everything and took a shower, and you know, and
don't need that wire.
Don't need that wire. That one's not working. You know, that kind of thing, and it worked out fine because I wanted to find out what my new normal was going to be.
Yeah.
And before I left the hospital, and so you know, God is great. He's good. I had great care. I had a lot of prayer. I wouldn't have gotten to this place of recovery without the concern and prayer. And I'm just humbled by all the people who showed concern. Truly am. I had no idea.
Do you think this changed your life, maybe the speed of your life, or maybe the direction of your life in some way?
So, boy, you are asking great questions this morning. So one of the questions that I had for Dr. Sethi and Dr. Patel, my Jenny and I had read a few months ago, Jenny, my wife, when somebody over 65 falls and has a significant fracture of some kind, they have a 1 in 3 chance of passing away within a year because of the fall. What happens as a result of the fall? It's not the fall itself. It's the result of the fall. And we had been reading some information that when somebody gets to their 70s, their health just falls off a cliff. Jenny and I had been reading about this, and we've been concerned about it. And so I told the doctors, I said, you know, my biggest concern is I don't want these 9 broken ribs to be a defining moment for my health for the rest of my life. So how do I move through this without it being a defining moment? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so the PT has been structured around making sure that I, not only do I return to the same level of health that I was prior, but maybe I can return to a better level of health, because I just don't want this to be that defining moment that it is for so many people. I mean, Scott, we're no spring chickens anymore, boss.
Hey, that's what I heard. Yeah.
That's what the rumor's true. It's not just a rumor. And so we have to do things a little bit differently.
It's during these types of trials and things that happen to us. We don't want them to happen, but they happen to us. But it's during these moments, I think, where we learn that our wife knows us much better than we realized.
And better than we know ourselves.
And that's why I brought up, did she stand guard at the hospital room not to let people in? Because she knew you wouldn't want it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. She knew what I needed to get better. It wasn't a reflection on, did I not want to see anybody? I wanted to focus on getting out of there. And when you're in that kind of pain, it's tiring to have people visit and fight the pain, both the physical and the mental part of that pain. The pain of 9 broken ribs is unlike anything I've experienced before. And the debilitating part of it now is I'm not sleeping. I cannot get a good night's sleep. So I kind of walk through my days like a zombie a little bit. But I'll be all right. Again, they say no hill for a stepper.
Pain is an interesting thing. I don't think I've been in that type of pain, what you're describing, but I know people who have. And the way they talk about that pain and that suffering when they're going through that, pain changes everything. I mean, it changes. You can't think straight.
You can't. And so that's why you need people around you to go, okay, like my staff, they have said, Mayor, what we're going to do, Rachel and Carla in the office and Eric, my chief of staff, he said, we're coming in on Monday. We're going to load you up in the morning, and then we're going to keep the afternoons free to find out how you're doing. So if you need to go home and rest, you can, or you can finish out the day. And so we're playing it by ear like that, so I don't push myself too much, because, again, I have a tendency to do that, and then that's going to create more setbacks. So being a macho man, Scott, is not going to serve me or the county very well. So I need to kind of listen to my body a little bit.
I guess it's during things like this, what you're going through, that you're able to kind of reflect and maybe even look back on old friendships or family members even and say, you know, I didn't understand, maybe it was cancer they were going through. I didn't understand it at the time. I didn't know what kind of pain you were in or suffering from, but I kind of get it now.
I do. And I cannot emphasize enough that if you're going through a trial, a tribulation, or you're suffering, two things. Don't do it alone, because you're not alone. You're never alone. Even to think that you are alone is a lie from hell. I'm telling you straight from the pit. And number two, there is a great opportunity waiting for you as you go through this difficulty. I believe that with all my heart and soul. There's something greater for us if we will embrace it, embrace the idea that you don't have to travel this road alone, whatever it is.
Once you fully heal, what do you think that first thing that you're going to be doing is going to be?
Oh, that is like such a no-brainer. I'm getting back on the horse, Scott.
The horse aside, that part of it aside.
I'm getting back in the saddle. You bet I am.
On the government side of things, what's the first thing that you're going to want to address? Because this is a life changer.
So, yeah. And so the great thing about another thing that I learned is that I have great staff. The county is blessed to have really great leadership. Every single department stepped up, without exception, stepped up and fulfilled the role of when the number one guy, the mayor, is incapacitated or limited in his ability, we all step up and fill the void. And they did. And that is a great lesson that nobody, especially the mayor, are not expendable. There's always somebody who can step in and do the job. Everybody is replaceable at some level, but most especially the county mayor. The staff did a phenomenal job stepping in, and they still do. They're great. They're phenomenal.
Your accident occurred at kind of a time of growth as far as emergency services go, because it happened, the 911 fee that people pay whenever they buy a cell phone, they paid each month, that goes up at the start of next year.
See, I didn't know that.
Which will help pay to further the technology.
I'll pay my share and some others too. How about that?
But it's interesting at what point this happened, because then also you have the Plainview Fire Department in Rutherford County. I mean, that officially opened and growing now.
I was out there Sunday for the flag raising. So,
I mean, all these things are happening as you have an emergency.
Yeah. And it just, and I think we tend to take, we don't tend to, we do. We take for granted the work and the professionalism and the training of our first responders, fire, EMS, law enforcement, sheriff's department, and the way the county and the cities work together on responding to these crises that occur in everybody's lives on a daily basis. It's phenomenal that the county, this is the fourth largest county in the state now, almost 400,000 people. And I'm telling you, I've been to other places and I've experienced other things, but nothing like what I experienced these last few weeks. We are truly blessed to be here, Scott. I'm just telling you.
The first responders we have here in Rutherford County, and we've got really good first responders in the counties that surround us, too.
We do.
But man, some of the more rural counties out there, their first responders are different than they are here. The training is different.
And they lean on us.
Yeah.
So, and that's a great response. We meant to, in a lot of cases, not all cases, but in a lot of cases, our first responders, our sheriff's department, we mentor other organizations around us. But that's the way it's supposed to be, because we have the ability, we have the resources, we have the training, and so we can help out little brother a little bit, and we should, just like the tornado of April of 2023. That was predominantly a Cannon County tornado, but we walked over there and said, you know what, Cannon County, we're just going to temporarily move the county line 1 mile due east, and we'll take care of this. TDEC and the federal government said, that's great, take care of it. And we got reimbursed and everything worked out great. But that's very typical of our response and the cooperation our law enforcement and our first responders have with surrounding counties and cities when they need our assistance. We're there.
You know, it wasn't too long ago that Rutherford County didn't have a full-time Rutherford County Fire Department. You know,
no.
I mean, that really wasn't that long ago.
This is Mayor Burgess's idea, and of course, Chief Farley was and still is the first chief, and he's doing a great job. And now we've got a firefighting force of, I think, about 100, 110.
And growing.
And growing. We got 5 public health and safety buildings, brand new, and we got 6 or more stations. We still got a couple or 3 volunteer fire departments. Our next public health and safety building is going to go out in the Almaville area, hopefully in the next 2 to 3 years when Smyrna gets the sewer line extended out that way, and we're going to get on top of that. That's in the pipeline. We're going to put a new EMS station up at Weekly Lane. We're fixing to go to bid on that next to the forensic center. We know we got to put another EMS station up at the Smyrna Airport. We got to get an EMS station up at Waldron Road on Laverne. There is a lot going on, and we're going to do all this, Scott, without raising property taxes. How about that?
Sounds good. Do you foresee a pay raise now in sight, maybe one happening sooner than later?
So I want to make a distinction. I will always propose, as long as I'm mayor, what's called a COLA.
Cost of living.
Cost of living adjustment. It's to account for inflation. Okay, so to me, that's not a pay raise. Some people would call that a raise because it's increase in their pay. But I call it a COLA, because a pay raise is based on making sure we're competitive, or based on merit or seniority or some other set of criteria.
I agree, yeah.
But this is a COLA. But the answer is, it is my anticipation every year to build into our budget a COLA, or cost of living adjustment. Right now, and this is really, really early, but right now, unless something happens, we're thinking about 3%, because that's been the inflation's been about 2.8, so we'll round up to about 3 if that's the way. And I kind of use the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, as my benchmark. But yeah, my hope is to do a COLA.
I wish we could do more than that. I mean, because the first responders really do make a massive difference.
They do, and I do too. We are competitive. We're more than competitive in a lot of places now, and we the first responders. They do a great job, but so do all county employees. You know, we have to, obviously we could do more than that if the taxpayers wanted a property tax increase. So you have to pick, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want a property tax increase and increase the pay of our first responders and county employees, or do we not? So yeah, those are the difficult choices the mayor and the county commission get to make. And so we're doing the best we can. We truly are.
Right before you had your accident, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think back, the Life Flight helicopter crash, wasn't that right before?
Yeah, that was in Wilson County.
A matter of a week
wasn't
or so.
Wilson County, I don't know how, did they ever determine the cause of that accident?
I think they did, yeah. I don't know that they publicly have said it.
Okay. Well, don't say it.
It's sad no matter what, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's sad. It surprised me because you typically think, I do, that a Life Flight helicopter probably has the most experienced pilots of all because of what they're doing.
The good thing is we do have really good first responders. And the only reason I brought up the Life Flight helicopter is because it seems like, man, just a lot unfolded around the same time period of your accident.
It is. And, you know, we talk about, and rightfully so, Scott, we talk about making sure that our first responders are adequately compensated, right? It's just not that. Do they have the gear? Do they have the training? Do they have the resources? You know, those kinds of things go into it as well. It doesn't do any good to pay you a really good wage without giving you the gear, the supplies, the technology, sure, the training to exercise all of that, if that makes any sense. It's a significant investment.
We're already out of time. I got to fit these commercials in somehow, but Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr with us this morning. Thanks for being here, man. I'm amazed that you're up here. You climbed up the steps and everything like a champ.
We climbed up the steps and everything.
Well, I guess we'll see you again next month or so.
It's a blessing. You guys, the listeners, have a great, great Thanksgiving and a wonderful holiday season. Thank you, Scott.